Welcome back to This Week on Channel 9. I am Mark DeFalco.
And I'm Duncan McKenzie.
Sweet. Glad to be back. I haven't been on in a while. You haven't been on.
I haven't been on in years.
Years and years.
Years.
In fact, you were saying last time you did this, it was in a different studio.
It was over in the little self-serve studio, where it's all sort of, you know, self-serve.
I think last time I was in that studio for This Week on Channel 9 was with, like, Dan.
Yeah. I think I did it with Clint. Which is almost as bad. And we are about as prepared for this as normally Clint and I would be, so hopefully you enjoy the kind of off-the-cuff
We like to keep a consistent level of quality.
Yes, so I try.
Let's jump right in. Our first news story is about the new mobile-optimized development lifecycle. So for example, the acquisition of Xamarin, the growth of Azure, and now... one thing I'm getting into recently is Hockey App. We had this brilliant lifecycle. I think Brian Keller would be thrilled to hear about application lifecycle management.
Yes.
We have this new optimized lifecycle.
Right. So the thing with all of these different parts is that, you know, when you're trying to hook together and do this development, generally you want to do it, you know, in one place and have these things work together and things like that. In a lot of cases before, you know, with Xamarin, for example, being a third party, it's a challenge. So you're moving between environments, you're moving between server environments, things like Hockey App, it's all very different. What we have here, and if you follow the link, is just a lot of details on how these things are kind of tied together, which is going to be wonderful for people.
The beautiful thing is that it's not a single destination either, for your app. So this is all about making an app that's for any mobile device, or that runs in the cloud, or that is in any of those places, or a PC app, or anything.
Right.
So definitely check it out and see how you can be more efficient in just getting things done.
Yep. And then continuing along in that same vein, so Xamarin, of course, Xamarin. Mm-hmm. Say it as many times as we can. We could have a drinking game if I say Xamarin. If we say mobile, those are all good reasons. So Xamarin just had their live event, which I think is still going on, but by the time you see this, it'll be over. So Xamarin Evolve.
Yeah.
Yep. And what's interesting is when they planned the event, they weren't part of Microsoft, and who knows, maybe people knew things, but it certainly we didn't know and it wasn't public. So Xamarin Evolve was a completely third-party event, nothing to do with Microsoft. Boom, they become part of it, they announce it, Build. 2 weeks later, they're having their big event, and people are like, why is it not on Channel 9? Why is it not live? And it's like, guys, we don't move that fast. But we kind of do. So I've already seen there's at least a page for it on Channel 9. They're going to take some of that content, they're going to put it up. Because otherwise you'd have to go to, I don't know, YouTube or something to see it. So there is a ton of content around Xamarin coming out, because there's the content from that event. And then there were 4 or 5 pretty good Xamarin-related talks and mobile development-related talks at Build. So I'll just a little shout out there for the Build content. We have 100 and some hours of content there from Build. And a certain amount of it gets seen because it's live and things like that. And then a lot of it people don't find. So just take the time, dig through it, and see what's useful for you. Add it to your queue if you knew you could do that.
There was plenty of content that's exclusively available on demand on Channel 9 that wasn't even presented at the conference.
Yep.
It was pre-recorded and ready to go and launched there. So Build was only a month ago. It feels like forever, but it was like a month ago. So even if you're watching like 8 hours a day, you probably still have content you can watch.
Definitely. And a lot of people would talk to us like, hey, is there a button to like download it all? That's a lot of stuff. But there is buttons on each one of them to download. And actually there was a discussion on Twitter recently. People were like, oh my God, you know, Channel 9 lets you download videos. Of course we do.
Yep.
You bet. You can download them. Some of the apps, which were built with Xamarin, by the way, like the iOS app, things like that, let you download. And just a little secret that I shouldn't let you know yet, the Windows app will have download very, very soon.
Sweet.
Certainly the prototype that I've seen has it as well. So
I'm sure if you dig around somewhere, and I don't know yet, but almost every year there's someone who writes a PowerShell script to go pull like...
There is.
Specifically like a track or a certain set of things is usually more efficient than getting 200, 300 gig of video.
There was even one person who wrote an app that would browse our list of events, let you pick the event and download it. And so it was actually calling into our OData API and things like that. I'll see if I can track that down and add a link to the show notes. Cool. So continuing with the Xamarin talk, we love Xamarin. It's just so exciting. But Xamarin, as part of all of these announcements at Evolve, has actually decided to go open.
The runtime, yeah.
Yeah. So a lot of that, the SDKs and the interop kind of stuff that works across the different platforms is actually being put up as open source. obviously, most people probably won't add to it or do anything like that, but having it there that you can dig into it, when, especially when you're having a problem, is always nice.
Yeah, I mean, it's been crazy the kind of, this may be a segue, the kind of journey it's been on from .NET in its heyday a decade or so ago.
It is a segue.
Into what was Mono, right. That Miguel right. de Casa, you know, kicked off a long time ago, into now what is Xamarin, and from our closed source or proprietary system into .NET being open source, into the Xamarin runtime being open source, into all this being yep. available to everyone.
Yeah, it is definitely a movement. And they, to his segue point, someone put together, and I should say who, but I'm not going to because I can't remember their name, a great timeline, though. It's not only really full-featured with information, but it's very attractive as well. And it goes through all the way back to when Anders first joined the company, and it's nice because it brings together the fact that when we started getting involved in Java as being sort of, you know, the beginning of a timeline towards .NET. And it's interesting because Anders was someone who, when I was in university a very, very, very long time ago, had written Think Pascal. Turbo Pascal. Thank you. Think Pascal we also had at the time. But anyways, had written Turbo Pascal, which we used in school. And so to consider this, you know, the impact of this person all the way across, and now as we release things like .NET Core and things like that, all coming through from that same, you know, starting time when we got him from Borland over to Microsoft.
You'd made a comment, I think, before the show about how many floppies things came on. That, yes. that reminds me of yes. yeah, getting a Delphi or Visual.
Yeah, well, I was thinking about, of course, for me, it was always Fox Pro, which I was like, I get confused because it was Fox Pro 2.6, but I seem to remember it was on like 26 3.5-inch floppies. And so you'd have a stack of them, and you'd have to put them in one at a time in order.
You also just, you had a stack, you put it in, it went upside down, kind of.
Yeah, you know, it was a lot of work. And at some point, I realized when I got rid of that computer and I wasn't using it anymore, I still had the disks and I didn't want to get rid of them.
I think I have some laying around somewhere in like my vault, probably my parents' house.
Yeah.
But I still have a bunch of stuff. There's an old.
I try not to keep stuff at my parents' house anymore.
Yeah, well, I don't have a lot of room.
Yeah.
Space is at a premium here. We talked about history. We could talk about the future. So you may have heard of .NET Core. Which is really a new beginning for .NET. It's been called previously a subset. It's not exactly that, and I don't want to refer to it that way. I had an excellent chat at Build with Beth Massey, who has some excellent content on this. That was one point she nailed home quite a bit, it's not. It's a new beginning. And if you know, it's smaller. It's more portable. You have a lot less of this. We had like the portable class libraries and things. You had to target specific profiles in order to get things to work cross-device, cross-platform. Together with a unified Windows platform and .NET Core, this is becoming a lot easier. So UWPs, obviously, for your devices, and ASP.NET.Core for your websites.
Yeah, and it's interesting. Is in the short term, I do think that there's going to be a certain amount of pain and confusion here, because when they do this shift, they basically, there's a reason why they're calling this, you know, version one of .NET Core, is because they're trying to essentially, I won't say start again, but to break this idea of the backwards compatibility and things like that here at this point, so that you know that, hey, I can still use ASP.NET, I can still use ASP.NET 4.5, is there still 5 that's .NET Core?
I think they changed 5 to .NET Core 1, or I could be confused.
See, I said there'd be some confusion.
Which is why there's this article to point you to.
Yeah, and so when you look at that, they're basically deciding that if you always tie yourself to we're going to do nothing but iterate on what we have, then at some point you're making things sort of difficult for us to leap ahead and do more interesting things. And so I like it. I like that they're doing it. It means I have to learn a bunch of stuff. And that's always hard because I'm older than him.
But your knowledge does transfer over.
Oh, sure, definitely. I mean, I did build my first web app with it, and it was doable, and I knew what I was doing. But just to a certain extent, when you've done something for a long time, and in the case of Channel 9 on the dev team, you know, we had been using ASP.NET 4, I think 4, not 4 or 5, for so long that we start to get involved in very, very fine details of the pipeline and the runtime that, you know, if you now want to go do something else, it's a very different world, so. But
I think like 10, 15 years before making a breaking change is acceptable.
Yeah, definitely, and I think, you know, it's not, we're not talking about like a VB6 kind of change here. This is a big deal, but still using many of the same libraries, still using C# for most people, that kind of stuff. But anyways, exciting stuff. And if anything, it means there's a good excuse to spend a few of nights and weekends building some tiny little app for yourself just to pick up all the new stuff.
Continuing on with the future, a new build of Windows 10 Insider Preview build 14.3.32.
We should give the builds names.
Oh, okay, but the names always stick.
Yeah,
is the problem.
But every build could have a different name.
This could be Fred.
Yes. Okay.
All right. 14.3.32. I mean, what's wrong with that?
The problem is internally a lot of people talk about. So the point of these builds, and we'll get to that in a second, is to get feedback,
yes.
Right? The reason, why do we release these insider rings and slow rings and stuff? And part of it, we say, well, so that you can get to see things sooner. Well, so you can get them sooner and you can help us and we can make it better. And it's a virtuous cycle where we're just going to go bang, bang, bang and make things better much rapidly than if we said, hey, in about 2 years, we'll give you something.
We'll give you a beta.
And then you can tell us what you think of it. And 2 years later, we'll improve it. So now this is this rapid iteration. But so people are always talking about, you know, oh, I had this problem. And they go, well, what build? I can't remember all these build numbers. So every time I got to go check. And then you got to sit here and you're like looking at your phone or something and you're typing it in. That's why we give them names.
Yeah, well.
We should.
Well, one other way around this is what they've been working on is through the feedback app. So the Windows Insider Feedback, oh gosh, that's probably not the name. Feedback tool.
Right.
This is the problem with the names. You have to get the name right. Let's move back a second. There's a four-day bug bash going on.
So it all ties together. The idea is you can actually give feedback right inside Windows,
right.
Which means you don't need to know the version number.
Yes.
Hence, my confusion would go away. And right now,
yes.
They're doing a big push.
As this airs,
it'll
still
be
on.
Bugs in.
A few days later, it will be over, but it won't be the last, I'm sure. They actually are looking for specifically targeted feedback, and so they do that in the way of quests, which if you're an RPG gamer, you love quests. These will be targeted for certain scenarios that we want to get your feedback on explicitly. And so there's things you can go and walk through, certain apps, certain, pass through multiple apps. And then when you file that feedback, we'll get it with so much detail already attached that you don't have to worry about.
Right.
So you don't have to worry about what builds, what your steps were, what was going on in the memory stack, whatever. Like everything that is necessary to make better software is automatically attached, submitted. Right. Archived. You can go in and view all the feedback that other people have submitted, and you can upvote. We can say show your affinity to certain scenarios or right. problems, and help those get fixed so that you can have a better product, and you can help us make you a better product. So the bug bash is going on now. Gabeall has a write up about that, and I'm sure it won't be the last one.
No, well, so this is something I didn't know about, these quests and things like that. So looking through this. I guess it's an ongoing feature.
If you've been on the Xbox Insider program for a while, you've probably seen them there. So again, Universal Windows, we're getting these concepts across everywhere that work one place, they're going to work across everywhere.
Which is great. Cool. So moving away from Windows, so one of the other big things that was announced recently, and there's so much news these days, like I said, because of things like Build, now Evolve, and just in general from some of these teams now, I think it's part of the openness, the pace at which they release previews and updates and, here's a version of what we're doing next. It seems much faster than before.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so one of the things that Visual Studio released is, and there's many things in Visual Studio, I hate the name, Visual Studio 15, because there's Visual Studio 2015. It's confusing.
Have you ever edited your own solution file and looked at the dev end?
I know.
And
so
totally
I know for a fact that, there was dev 14. So I get that, but it's still confusing.
Oh, absolutely.
And I see notices about, Visual Studio 15, and I'm like, yeah, I got that already. Oh, no, wait, this is something else.
Not
anyways, one of the things that they really brought up was that they were starting to realize that as a product like this grows and has all sorts of dependencies, so I assume if you're watching this, you've probably installed Visual Studio before, you get that tree of options, right? Do you want to include C++? Do you want to include the Windows SDK? Do you want to include F#? All these things. And it's quite a bit. And if you check it all off, there's gigs and gigs of files that have to get downloaded. But the problem is, even if you check down to the minimum, it's still pretty big. So in Visual Studio 15, they put quotes around it. That's completely accurate.
Yes.
And probably brand specific. You can get a very minimum install. And honestly, I don't know how solid it is because of the nature of the install is that it's grabbing the files as it goes. So I don't know if there's any numbers in the article. But it's sort of what's cool is we have an article here that goes through why. I think that's there's lots of good reasons, but it's not, you know, a big shocker. But then how? How did they separate out these dependencies so that they could give you a good editor experience with the minimum amount of time?
They do have a number. You want to take a guess?
What it was before?
What it is, what they're aiming for.
1 gig.
325 meg.
See?
That's nice. That's pretty good. That's, nice. That's yeah. much better than
it is.
Gigs and gigs.
Somewhat related to that, I have been spending a lot of time in VS Code lately.
Ah, yes.
And I hadn't used it because normally doing dev on something like Channel 9, I got Visual Studio, I'm fine. But everyone's like, oh, code's amazing, you should try it. And I had to do a whole ton of work recently with a bunch of Node.js stuff and a bunch of Markdown stuff. And I thought, well, I'll use VS Code because people say it's great. It's awesome. And it's nothing particularly spectacular. It's just even little things like being able to right click on a folder and just say opening code. Mm-hmm. And now I have that entire directory there as if it was like a project. That kind of functionality is one of the things that they're moving towards in Visual Studio as well. So if you have your tool of choice, you're not going to be like, oh, well, I need to have this to get this functionality and this. They're bringing these things together. They're bringing all sorts of functionality that people really like from one into the other as well. So cool stuff.
Yeah, along with like the heavy kind of footprint, there's right. no licensing or anything or purchasing. It's just,
right.
I mean,
right.
there are all the free editions of Visual Studio that are fantastic, but
yep.
this just dumps on whatever OS you're running, whatever
yeah,
machine
I mean,
you're running.
Yeah, I mean, I think if we were to do analysis on my machine, the number one app I run is probably Notepad. And maybe that's boring, real devs, Notepad++ or Vim or something, but I fire up Notepad all the time just to quickly dump text in. Sometimes I use it as like a little clipboard ring almost.
Just I copy stack traces in there all the time.
Right, and so Notepad is running all the time, and so often what I'm using Notepad for is I just need to open up this little HTML file and I just want to tweak something or look at something, and I can use code for that now.
Sure.
Because it's in the Explorer integrated, so just yeah. right-click the file, open with code. It's awesome.
One of the other things we announced, which was quite a shock to several people, was the Windows subsystem for Linux. No one saw that coming.
Yeah.
The ability to run your, if you are a developer who runs on, who is used to either like a Mac OS or directly on Unix, or Linux rather, I should say, used to kind of your aux sed, Vim, Emacs, all that fun stuff just running natively on the Windows subsystem for Linux. And
yep.
It's done in a very intricate way, one that I cannot describe appropriately, probably. I am definitely not good enough to. But Deepu Thomas has this fantastic article called The Windows Subsystem for Linux Overview, exactly what it sounds like. But it goes into everything about the user mode session manager, the whole instance lifecycle, how separate things like your package managers are going to interact with the Unix subsystem, but also in Windows. It's a whole new kind of world, and this is, and again, something else that we're requesting a ton of feedback for, since it's so brand new and opens the gates to all sorts of new scenarios.
And there are Build 2016 videos on this one, at least for sure, and I think some of the pre-recorded sessions as well. But one that was at the event that goes into a good amount of detail has demos because it was a live video. And then I think there's a recent video from Seth as well where they talk about this in detail. And similar to Mark, I couldn't explain how it works or why. I know what the experience is like and I understand the benefits. But if you're into that, and especially if you're, I don't know, it's a long time since I took my operating system course in university. But if you're interested in seeing how they manage to work, the details there, they're posting it all up and they understand that people, you know, want to know, is this just some emulation? And it's like, no, it goes into deep detail on how it actually works. Cool.
Friend of the show, Rick Barraza, has I don't know if it's a series of videos
It is a series of videos,
yep. And there will be more, actually,
yep.
about AI mixed reality and the new software landscape, specifically from a design perspective.
Yep.
Because working in 3D does change the way you do things. You can just put a 2D interface on top of a volumetric or 3D experience, it's not good. For example, you walk to the side of a 2D object and it disappears.
Right.
And menus and drop-downs and things like that, there's just no need for those when you have a third dimension to work in. You can interact with the world in a more natural way that you're used to and move from there instead of having this kind of abstraction from what you want to do. So if you're interested at all in mixed reality, virtual reality, or any of that stuff, which you should be, it's super cool. Definitely check out this video. And from the original feedback we got, he will be producing a additional set coming up shortly,
right.
Going more in detail about individual subjects in it.
And from this video, go to his name, take a look around. He's done other videos related to this. Rick is a design evangelist, and he was on Coding for Fun before,
yeah.
So worked with Channel 9 for a long time. And one of the big things they often did was produce user interfaces that were kind of interesting. You know, you think back to the boxing robots, and there was a game where they had the two things, and there was like fireballs.
Oh, yeah.
Meteor.
I don't remember what it's called.
Something like that. Anyways, the point being is this has always been his thing. And what's interesting about these videos is he's not here necessarily teaching you how to code. He's just talking about it from the point of view of almost like, how should we think differently about design with these new things available to us? So it's fascinating
right.
stuff. And we're happy he's putting it up on the site.
Cool. Speaking of mixed reality, the Microsoft HoloLens development edition went on, started shipping to developers at build, essentially, that same time frame. And people are getting their hands on it, and actually I've already seen a bunch of videos popping out of people creating some stuff. It's exciting to see. If you ever want to see the inside of a HoloLens, this is your chance. Tom Warren over at The Verge has an extensive article that was posted up from his experience at build with a full teardown. So you will see every part down to the baggie of screws that held everything together. The way the batteries are connected, all of the sensors, everything in there.
Now, just as a funny side note, so Mark had a lot to do with some HoloLens stuff at one point.
Something to do
with
some.
Yeah, I don't want to get into details or whatever. But when he first saw this picture, his immediate thought was that somebody had just done it. Someone had, you know, got their dev one or whatever and had just tore it to pieces.
It was a little whoa.
And it, you know, the thought of someone, I mean, people do it. They do tear down and try to look at it.
You know it's going to happen.
But it's so many parts and so many pieces. And it was done in such detail that, you know, it's sort of good to know that this was actually done by people who probably know how to disassemble it and put it back together and how things work. Or maybe they wouldn't even put it back together.
It was actually done by us.
Right.
We provided, we actually left reporters in rooms with HoloLenses completely alone to do whatever they want because, again, I mean, it's ready to go out. It's in people's hands.
Right.
So along with that, there was a completely torn down one in there so that they could go through all the parts. And without having to go to the trouble of getting rid of the very premium, like I know there's plenty of people on the waiting list still waiting for theirs.
Right.
It'd be a shame to destroy one.
Right. It's like those people who get the very first, you know, new phone or something.
And then put it under a hydraulic press.
Yeah, or blend it or something. And it's very destructive.
Hydraulic press is the new blend it.
Is it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not up to date on my destroying of expensive objects.
That's the old and busted. So. Literally old and busted. Well, literally busted.
Crazy stuff.
Whew.
So, continuing on, this actually, it's related in some ways to, once again, our future theme, but a lot of things are changing. And there's a great article here, and it's part of this stories section of the Microsoft site that I find kind of fascinating, because they're sort of long form articles where they're exploring sort of concepts more than they are products and things like that. And I think that's always a good thing to do. I think it's great to look at where things are going instead of just, oh, look, we have, you know, version 6 of this and it's got these 5 features, which is also important. But, you know, to take a look at what's changing. And one of the big things that this article talks about is it sort of happens slowly, but now we kind of just accept the idea that with the cloud and things like that, you know, we move from device to device. Our data's still there. Even Mark and I, we've got, you know, our slides here and our plan. This isn't the computer we worked on them on. We didn't have, either one of us had the deck on us when we came in the room, and we realized we could bring it up on our phone if we wanted to, and we could have been doing it on there. We ended up in here. That's a tiny thing, you know, it's just some doc sharing. But imagine how much of a change it is in the world that, like, the telemetry from your apps, you know, you're wearing a band or whatever, all that data is just flowing and syncing and being used by, you know, this app and that app, and it changes things. And I think most users are already taking it for granted.
Yeah, I mean, you wouldn't, yeah, not in the bad sense, but in the way that it's invisible, and actually that's what's called the invisible revolution. A lot of it's happening behind the scenes. Processing power, Moore's law is kind of at its end. Transistors are just not getting smaller. We're at the very ends of that. We're not doubling the amount in any kind of chipset. Number of cores is still hovering around 4, 8, you know, servers have some more, but it's all for very specialized things. So now it's more about offloading and more thin clients and offline computation or even real-time computation in the cloud, where we have this elastic, ephemeral kind of services that can spin up, do a bunch of work, Channel 9 has been doing this for a while, but it was all very custom coded where we'd have an event. So we'd have 140 hours of video. So a bunch of services would spin up, show on them, then spin down.
Yep.
But now this is all coming to you in a like commercial turnkey way almost.
And it's interesting is that the idea, someone recently on one of the teams, you know, sent me a note saying, hey, by the way, how do I buy a server? And my first reaction was like, so hold on, let's back up. What are you doing? And why are you buying a server? And what were you going to do with this? Where were you going to put it? What are you doing? Because we have, even if you're not using the cloud, people have on-premise Hyper-V. They have all sorts of things where basically this idea of computing power is just a resource that we get more of, less of, get rid of when we don't need it. And it changes a lot of things. So anyways, the great article goes into just the kind of effect this has on people's interaction with technology and how it will affect how people dev stuff. So it's cool stuff.
Say it's great because one of my first roles here was an SDET, which basically meant I was part of the test automation team. That was part of my role was speccing out servers we needed for our test rigs.
Right.
And just the other day, I emailed our IT department and said, hey, I need a new VM. And like 30 minutes later, he replies, here's a go, you're an admin.
Yeah.
So much easier, so much nicer, and so much easier on their end too. They don't have to go and literally install anything in a rack or anything.
Now we're not at the point yet, at least I'm not, I still dev on an actual machine. I can work offline, that kind of stuff. The idea of connecting to a VM and doing it there, it's not just a, like someday sort of thing. I know there are teams that do that. It's not me. I like to have a machine I can use on the plane and such, but still there is a path there towards, being able to potentially go from device to device and still access even the same, apps that you had installed.
Well, you used to carry around a much larger laptop to do your work.
I did.
So that's definitely been at least an improvement in that.
Yeah, it's now like docked and it doesn't move. So, but continue on.
We are now at our picks of the week.
Yeah.
So my pick of the week is the API catalog. So in the Edge development blog, they just posted about this thing that started internally. They needed a way to compare the API support of Edge to the API support of the W3C specifications.
Mm-hmm.
And then they also built it out to test out agnostically any browser. So there's these tools, and they've released them, and they released all of the data. And there's this wonderful Venn diagram here that shows exactly just the situation we're in. Everyone says, oh, this supports that.
Right.
Everything supports a little bit of something.
Right.
And there's overlap, and there's plenty of stuff that works everywhere, and there's plenty of stuff that only still works in one of each of the browsers. A lot of it experimental, a lot of it kind of new and fresh, like real-time communication or WebSockets and stuff like that have been iterated over a while. But it's very interesting to have kind of this real-time, be able to delve into the details of specifically what APIs are supported and have it automated so that you can just know.
And tied to that, you can get lists. Like if you are interested in knowing, for a particular specific specification, how broadly is this available?
Yes.
And so if you're doing something on the site, is it worth, do I need a polyfill? Do I need to worry about this? Can I go ahead and just use it? And you get that kind of thing. And one of the things that you'll see when you look at it is no one, I could be wrong, but as far as I can tell, no one implements all of the specs.
Yeah, no.
So when often sometimes people will be like, they will be upset at a particular browser and they'll say, hey, that's in the spec. Yeah, sorry, it's always a moving target and people, almost no one has implemented them all. I don't even know if everyone implemented them all for HTML4. And now of course new things are coming out all the time. So it is always evolving, which is what makes being a web developer such a fun and exciting thing to be.
I enjoy it.
Yeah, me too. Cool, and then somewhat related to that, my pick of the week is something called Axe.
Axe.
If you follow accessibility topics, you probably will have heard of Marcy Sutton. She's a developer, does a lot of things with accessibility work. And one of the things that, and I don't know how much of the dev work was her versus other people, so I won't try to give the wrong credit here, but she's been pointing out this large toolkit that she was part of called Axe. And what's interesting here is that accessibility testing involves a lot of manual steps. And so one of the arguments in some cases against making sites correctly accessible is that people don't have the time or the ability to do good testing. And what we all want in the end these days, I think, is you want these things integrated into your automated tests.
Yes.
So as you have multiple people, they're checking code, things are changing, you want to always be able to iterate that. There have been scanners before that will look at things like HTML and will tell you, hey, look, here's all of the issues. But it's actually quite complicated in an interactive site. So imagine like an Angular site or something like that. Things are coming in, new markups coming in that wasn't there. It's not part of the files. It's not there at all. And so to test the functionality, we often move to things like Selenium and things like that. Well, this toolkit allows you to bring in accessibility testing to that as well. So it's a little involved. You have to actually add things to your test harnesses and to your test work to do it. But the end result is that now, as you're iterating and adding functionality, in addition to all your other tests, you're going to know, hey, if I increased, reduced, or broken the accessibility compliance of my site. I think that's amazing. I think anything that helps work accessibility testing into the actual workflow of people's development is a good thing.
Absolutely. Like people worry about, does this work on all the browsers? But we should really be worrying about, does this work for everyone?
Right.
So
it's all the same sort of thing. And bringing that in, and actually just to throw all the way back to the beginning, when it comes to apps, the Xamarin Test Cloud is something they talk about. You definitely want to click on that, take a look. The idea of testing your app across 2,200 different devices simultaneously is something the Test Cloud can do. And so if you're worried about testing across, the maybe 40 versions of a browser that you choose to support, imagine 2,200 devices. So all definitely something that you want to work into the process. This acts is something that if you're worried about accessibility testing, and you should be, you can work into your development as well.
Fantastic.
Cool.
That wraps it up for this week on Channel 9. Thanks for coming along. Hope you can jump in the seat once in a while.
Well, I'll try. We'll see what people say.
Cool. Thanks, and see you guys next week.